morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
That's an awesome song you picked up for the intro.
Yeah, that was actually the... when I was a kid, I had a... my first computer was a ZX Spectrum.
Oh, shoot. And, you're showing a little bit of your age there, Dazza.
Yeah, I know. And that was basically the theme tune from the Ghostbusters game. That you could get it, which the game was really long, dull, and pointless to be for many reasons. I've not got real time to go into. But the one saving grace was that it had a it actually played the entire Ghostbusters tune in that manner with all beeps and everything. And believe it or not, back in those days, that was pretty awesome to basically get an entire song. That was like sort of, you know, groundbreaking compared to, you know, nowadays when you've got basically all these sort of like, you know, cinematic computer games that you guys play and stuff. But, you know, that was pretty big. And believe it or not, the computer games that I had for the ZX Spectrum, they ran on a maximum of 48K memory. Wow. So if you look what you can do with 48K on computers today, it's not a lot.
Let's see. Now you've had me curious. Since we're talking all things Ghostbusters and video games, I'm curious what the NES theme of it sounds like. Not that much better from the get right off the bat. I don't know because I don't talk to you that often, not as much as I talk to the guys from Comic Conversations, but we talk often back and forth. Are you familiar with the Angry Video Game Nerd on the internet?
I don't think I am, no.
Okay, because he did a review of that Ghostbusters game from the Nintendo. He absolutely rips on it because it's a pretty awful game. I think for the most part, yeah. Most of the Ghostbusters games have been pretty awful.
Yeah. I mean, this one, it was really long, and it was a really pointless game because it was, no matter how sort of, how many times you basically got Ghostbusters killed going on, basically you basically just went on the same mission again and again and again, which basically was to basically catch a Slimer type ghost. Mm-hmm. And no matter how many times you lost, it basically just went on and on and on until basically you finally fought the Marshmallow Man right at the end. Mm-hmm. But there was absolutely sort of no point to basically, you know, no matter how many times you caught Slimer or didn't catch him and lost Ghostbusters, it paid no actual sort of, there was no benefit to you. For the final boss battle, and you always got to the boss battle anyway. It was just the weirdest game, but it was really long and really boring. And like I said, the only good thing about it was the at the time, which was great, was hearing all those little beeps and stuff making the Ghostbusters theme music at the start. That was the one highlight.
Yeah, I will say this: for the most part, Ghostbusters has been really hard to translate to a video game, with the sole exception being, I don't know if you've done this, Dada Gaza, because you're again, you, the fact that you're talking about the computer game of Ghostbusters, but have you played the, I think it's the PS3 or the Xbox 360 reincarnation of Ghostbusters?
I haven't. No,
those are spectacular games. And I don't know why, because really, you know, at the time before the Ghostbusters had come out, there was really no real search or anything Ghostbusters. But I think it's Atari who made the game. They went out of their way and they made this fantastic 5-star Ghostbusters game. That's it's an original story, but it starts off with the retelling of the first movie. So if you're ever so inclined to play some quasi last generation retro games, I would check that one out, Dazza. Don't get the one for the Wii one. That one's kind of a knockoff. It's made by the same company, but the characters look a little bit different and it plays a little bit different.
Okay. So a game on the PS3 is considered retro now.
It's last generation. Now retro. Maybe when your birthday comes around or when Christmas comes around, maybe I'll be sure to send it to you for Christmas.
Yeah, well, I've not got a PSP. The last computer console I got was a PlayStation 2. So, you know,
well, I think nowadays those come cheap. So I'll see what I can do, Dazza. You do a lot for us at halfcard.com, and maybe Papa Coughlin will throw him some cash as well. All right, since we're talking Ghostbusters, let's talk your review of the Ghostbusters movie.
Okay, yeah, I mean, the reason why I've sort of, we've bumped this up to to the start instead of at the end is it gives us a chance to basically talk about all the controversy, as it was, because I can't think of a film where so much has been discussed and debated about the film, which has no relation to actually, you know, what we actually got on the screen. It's really been one of the weirdest builds to a film, release that I've ever known. I went to see it this week, and I'll basically just start with basically what I, you know, thought of a movie. I mean, I'll go into the sort of all this, you know, the history of sort of, you know, what I've sort of, you know, come across with this. But I went to see it last week, and I thought the film was fine. I for the most part, you know, enjoyed the film. It wasn't a great film, but I liked the things I found fun about it was the banter, you know, between the four of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought about, you know, really well. I really did like the comedy. Kate McKinnon, who a lot of people seem to be like mixed on, and you know, people didn't like her performance. I basically really liked her in it. You know, she and maybe it's because I sort of like, you know, weird goofy women, you know, or whatever. But she made me laugh, you know, a hell of a lot. Leslie Jones, those few times I kind of wanted her just to tone it down a little bit. but generally speaking, you know, I really did, you know, enjoy the banter with them. And I thought the stuff with Chris Hemsworth was absolutely hilarious because he came in and played this basically like really dumb beefcake, and the stuff that he was, you know, just like really inept at his job as being a secretary, and I just found the whole thing hilarious. I think rather strangely, I think the film took a dive in the moments when he actually got to the actual ghostbusting plot. You know, I was fine with him sort of doing all the, you know, the really silly stuff and stuff like that. But it was this like really weird moment in the film, like about halfway through, where all of a sudden it was almost like they'd forgotten to actually get into the actual, you know, the plot of what the Ghostbuster thing was. And they suddenly rushed it in this like really one really weird scene where they suddenly sort of like figured out like the bad guy's plan. The bad guy was awful in it, by the way. It was just like a really sort of like, you know, badly motivated, really dull villain. And the stuff as well, because it shared the same sort of thing that Star Wars Force Awakens is, where it basically sort of like, you know, redid a lot of the story from the original film. And it did this here. It sort of like, you know, ate, and it is a reboot as such. But in most scenes where it sort of did that, I kind of, you know, when we were sort of doing the actual ghostbusting at the end, fighting the big boss and everything, those scenes I just sort of like, you know, I didn't like. I actually, you know, preferred the sort of, you know, the comedy and them sort of, you know, just sort of, you know, the banter between those sort of thing. That was the stuff that I was like, you know, really enjoying it. But for the most part, you know, I actually, you know, did, you know, enjoy the film, and I did laugh at it a lot. And the first sort of half hour, I was thinking, you know, this is going to be great. It did sort of like peter out, you know, later on. So, you know, but for the most part, I liked it. The cameos, I'm not spoiling this for anybody when I say that, you know, pretty much all the Ghostbusters, you know, appeared in cameos of one sort or another, and I could have basically done without them. You know, none of them particularly good. The Dan Aykroyd one was like cringeworthy. You know, it really was. It was sort of like, you know, really corny. You know, and we had an Ozzy Osbourne cameo where he shouted Sharon, which is like for God's sake, it's 2016, and we're not. Are we not past that yet? You know, it was just sort of, it was something I thought that sort of died, you know, ran its course about 10 years ago. So, but yeah, you know, just to sort of like, you know, cut to the chase, you know, my rating would be like, you know, 3 out of 5. I enjoyed it as a film. It's not great. It's not a patch on the original. I understand why a lot of people really don't like it. But generally speaking, I had fun with the film, and, you know, I personally thought it was fine. And going back to basically what I was sort of saying earlier, this was one of the weirdest builds to a film ever, because as soon as this film was announced, there was this massive backlash straight away. And there was a lot of stuff where people were basically unhappy. But I mean, it was quite mixed, but there were some people just really, really unhappy that the film was being remade at all, you know, and in a rebooted manner, you know, because, you know, it's a film that basically, you know, fans of the original have sort of like, you know, have got a, you know, a real passion for, you know, real love this film. And then there was also this real ugly side where people were basically, you know, hating the fact that it was like, you know, that they changed it to four women in the lead roles. There was a lot of that sort of thing. Now, this caused, and the whole thing was not helped either by the fact that the trailers that they released for these films were absolutely awful. You know, because I have an open mind to most films, you know, because I want films to be good. And even when I hear stuff like for example, Batman v Superman, you know, the very first sort of little teasers that came out, people already sort of like, you know, criticized it. So I always like to keep an open mind of this sort of thing. But those trailers were awful. And it's funny that there were scenes that I absolutely hated in the trailer. For example, the bit where they're at the concert and they do like the crowd surfing bit, and when they're sort of doing where Melissa McCarthy gets possessed by one of the ghosts. Those bits I hate. I saw those in the trailer and I thought, this film's going to be awful. But when you actually see them in context in the film itself, they weren't too bad. You know, the stuff at the concert, I actually sort of, you know, really enjoyed. And it was weird how they sort of took things that were sort of like, you know, decent scenes and stuff and made them look really, really awful. I mean, the Chris Hemsworth stuff, they basically made look like, you know, cringeworthy. But when you saw it all in context in the film, I really enjoyed it. So it didn't help with that, but it was one of these really weird things where people were basically sort of like attacking the film without having seen it, and attacking it for, you know, for the sort of, you know, the fact that it was for women and everything. But you also got this like really weird backlash where basically anyone who was sort of and criticizing the film because they didn't like the trailers was suddenly being sort of lambasted as, you're doing this because you're sexist. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the key points about this is there was a guy on a website called Cinema Massacre, mm-hmm. and a reviewer called James Rolfe, who I have to admit,
remember how we were talking? This all ties in. Remember I was telling you earlier, hey, Danza, have you heard of this guy called Angry Video Game Nerd? It's the same guy.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's good. I'm sorry. Continue with what you were saying, but I couldn't help it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I've got to admit, I don't particularly know much about this guy, but from the stuff that I've seen of him, I'm not particularly a fan of his manner and way he basically sort of like, you know, talks about films. He's just not, you know, one of the sources that I would listen to. But he basically made a point in his on his show that he was basically not going to see Ghostbusters. Because he was a fan of you, and he basically made his points, you know, quite, you know, succinctly, that basically he wasn't sort of, you know, he was a fan of the original. He didn't like the whole reboot business, and he made sort of like, you know, a clear argument of why he wasn't, you know, going to go see. He did make a joke about one of the Ghostbusters that died, which I think was Sam Raimi. I could have got that name wrong, but the one who died recently, he did make a joke about him saying that at least he sort of died not having to see this film, which I personally, when I saw that, I thought, arsehole.
That's a little extreme.
Yeah, that is, when he sort of said that, I thought, God, you need a slap for that. But what actually happened afterwards, and like I said, for the most part, he made basically just sort of, you know, a clear thing that even though he was a reviewer, he just wasn't going to buy into this, and he didn't want to go see it. There was a backlash against him, calling him sexist and misogynist and whatever, because he was, and at no point in this film did he ever mention the fact that he was not going to see it because there was four women mm-hmm. in the leads. So, and there was, and basically you got a lot of this. When the reviews started coming out, the people who didn't like it were having to preface their reviews by saying, I'm not against the women being in it. You know, it was almost as if people actually sort of like, you know, there was, you know, were worried about the backlash against it. I meant to point out that, you know, that they weren't sexist for not liking this. So it's a very weird thing. You also got this real, and people were basically saying like, you know, that the people who were reviewing it were basically couldn't handle, you know, four females in the lead role of Ghostbusters. You also got this very other weird backlash, where people who were reviewing, because reviews that came out were basically generally probably similar to what I've done, but some people liked it, some didn't, and some were basically sort of said, you know, it's not great, but it's okay. It's not, you know, a disaster. Incidentally, Ghostbusters is about 300 times better than the Independence Day movie I saw a few weeks back. I just want to put that out there because I mentioned that the week. But then you've got people who are actually giving positive reviews, who were then being accused by certain groups of that they were basically lying about the reviews because they didn't want to get, lambasted with being sexist. So it was this very weird that people were sort of in this situation that, you know, they were damned if they don't, damned if they don't. And people were, and just to, you know, because I'm sort of going on about this, but just to sort of, you know, illustrate one of the things that really annoyed me about this film. John Campia, who basically does reviews for Collider and a few other places, he basically did a review about Ghostbusters, which was, you know, a fairly balanced review. He generally liked it. It was positive, but, you know, he said that there was a lot of things wrong with it. And he basically started getting, on his YouTube, he basically started getting like a lot more sort of negative responses than normal, and people basically calling him, saying that he was obviously being paid off by Sony, putting all these allegations to him. So he basically did something called, he mentioned this on his podcast. He went on sort of, he checked basically the analytics of basically the feedback he was getting, and he managed to trace them back to this message board where people were basically organizing, like almost like a campaign of harassment of people who were basically giving Ghostbusters like positive reviews. And one of the quotes that sort of he said was somebody saying that the reviews weren't being negative enough as we would like. So we were basically going to start, you know, basically trying to discredit the actual reviewers of that thing. Now, if you have, I don't get trolling. I just never have done. But why, if it's a film that you don't like, I hated Independence Day a few weeks back, okay? So I went to the my podcast, I talked about it, how much I hated it, and that sort of thing, and then moved on.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are basically, if you're basically starting like a campaign to attack a movie, which is, you know, just let the movie run its course. If you're really that passionate about sort of Ghostbusters, either, you know, basically do what the Cinemassacre guy did, and basically, you know, don't go to see it. Or basically, you know, see it yourself, tell people that you hate it, and then move on. Why do you have to make this into a sort of like a campaign to attack a movie? If you feel that strongly, you know, be positive. Why not go out there and pick a movie that you really, really like, which is on at the moment, which isn't going to get the sort of, you know, the publicity that Ghostbusters is, and tell everybody about that, and tell them, don't go to see Ghostbusters. Go to see this really other awesome film instead, which you'll enjoy a lot better. You know, make it sort of, you know, if you're that sort of offended by remakes and everything, and, you know, and I can understand people, you know, not liking, you know, the whole remake culture and everything like that. I can understand that. But to actually, you know, make it like a personal crusade to basically, you know, to organize, to basically almost like a protest against a film like Ghostbusters. There's a lot of things which are fucked up in this world at the moment that you should probably protest about. A really sort of average comedy movie is not really sort of high on the list. There's a lot of other things that you could basically, you know, get into sort of, you know, a real organized protest about. And I just think it's really, really weird how everything has been blown out of proportion. Like I said, you know, everyone's entitled to an opinion and express it. You know, when those trailers came out, they were crap. I understand people going on and, you know, talking about the trailers. But to make this into like, you know, a political agenda, and then to take this even further and start, you know, going on Twitter and abusing the actresses and the makers of this, I just think this has been a very weird and sad sign of the internet age.
Yeah. Sort of to piggyback on what you're saying, but also I have my theory behind that as well. Yeah, I don't take this seriously. I think what we're having is a lot of people are growing up with the internet now, and what often you have is the loudest voices are usually the ones that are people think are, that's the majority of people, and that, the fact of the matter is those don't reflect the internet at large or moviegoers at large. Just because they're out there and they have this platform, it doesn't mean necessarily that their opinion is worth anything. I'm even of the opinion of, obviously, since I'm a pro wrestling fan, I always think there's something sinister behind it or something fake. A lot of these things, it's like, who said all these things? Who said all these sexist things about the movie? Can anyone name a name behind all these things, Dazza? Or is it just a nameless face and an online screen name. It's like I haven't heard any names. And honestly, because of that, I'm starting to think a lot of this is manufactured. Because really, you could say all you want about the back and forth, the taking of the sides, but really, I think at the end of the day, it's people are talking about the film now, and even this, the movie has long since come out now, and we're here still talking about it. So I can't help but feel like this is sort of maybe a 2016 era of viral marketing where the studio will get a couple of people, they'll make all these anonymous accounts online, they'll stir it up and get people going back and forth saying how if you don't support this film, you're sexist. I'm surprised in the age of YouTube where you have all these people going out there producing high quality videos, I'm surprised no one has thought to remake the trailers that we saw and that most people weren't a big fan of, do the exact same trailer for the movie, but with men. And here's my thing. I wasn't too keen on the film, and I still haven't seen it. But with your review, I may be inclined to see it now. But I'm surprised no one has done a shot-for-shot remake of that original trailer with dudes. Because I'd be of the opinion of the movie still looks bad. And that was a lot of the argument I had against the film. I said, if you've gone and done a shot-for-shot remake of that trailer and put it with men, I would still think it looks like a bad movie. Part of the reason why, obviously we didn't get too much of a story, but a lot of it is just what you get in films in 2016, which is why, sort of something related to it, which is why I liked Star Wars Episode 7 so much. It had so many practical effects. And really, someone who's grown up on that, I prefer something like that. And most films nowadays, when we're dealing with special effects, and I understand where the studios are coming from, because practical effects are very expensive. They're not cheap. And when they have to choose between that and CG, they're going to go with CG. But I just think the CG thing was too much for me. And as someone who's seen and grown up with the original Ghostbusters, it rubbed me the wrong way. It's like, I'm used to Ghostbusters being this, and now it's that, and I'm not 100% on board. The women thing, whatever. In fact, I kind of liked it. In fact, I was kind of disappointed because I think originally, wasn't Emma Stone originally attached to this project?
I've not heard that, but yeah, possibly.
I think it was in the very early stages,
right,
where they were still kind of spitballing a lot of the ideas what the film was going to be. I mean, I sort of saw this thing coming with sort of what we were talking about earlier. They produced this video game. It did really well. It was a well-produced video game. Then they did this thing where they were re-releasing in theaters, seeing how it does. And whenever I see stuff like that, and even going forward, I always think, oh, they're probably, the studio's probably dipping their toes in to see how much of a market, how much are people pining to see Ghostbusters. And I heard Dan Aykroyd, he said, depending how this film does, if it does really well, we'll do a third Ghostbusters movie with the original continuity. But since then, I've heard a couple of stories that really, he just has no plans on doing that. He's just using that as an excuse to get people to see Ghostbusters. But, you know, it did fairly well. In fact, that's part of my criticism of the film. When I saw the trailer, sort of like when we were talking about the X-Men movie, I wanted it to either be really bad or really good. Right. And then when I saw the reviews from it, including yours, I'm like, I think Rotten Tomatoes was at like 77. I was like, oh, so there's no real story here. It's not really good despite all the people being down the film, but it's also not like a Fantastic Four or Batman versus Superman where everybody knew it was going to be bad and man is it awful. So for me it's like, well, if it's just okay, if it's just a C movie, it's like I don't know if that's enough to get me to go see the movie. Now your review of it, it's like, well, maybe I'll watch. And I am a fan of what's her name, McKinnon, what's her name?
Kate McKinnon.
I am a big fan of Kate McKinnon. That, to me, that just from the trailer alone, I was like, well, maybe I'll see it for her because I'm a big fan of the stuff she does in SNL. And it's like, well, the rest of the cast is all right. You know, I could leave or take them, but with her on there, I may be inclined to watch the movie. And then putting Chris Hemsworth was kind of fun because you had the gender flip of the Ghostbusters, you also had the secretary gender flipped. But at the same time, it's like, well, okay, that's cute. And if you were doing like a web short, that'd be a really great idea. But a full length movie, it's like, I'll see how the reviews are. And the fact that they're just so, it's like, I don't know if I'm going to go out of my way to watch this film.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, if you miss it, you're not missing a great deal. You know, I was glad I went to see it because I sort of, you know, I was really entertained by it. Like, you know, like say, you know, Kate McKinnon, she just had that sort of, that sense of humor that just like really, really appealed to me. You know, and I sort of, you know, I did actually end up having a crush on her by the end of the film because she was really funny. But, you know, I really like Melissa McCarthy and Kirsten Wiig as well. I think they've got like a really great chemistry, you know, between them. And there's just a lot of stuff that I really enjoyed. And the Chris Hemsworth stuff, it was almost a thing that you were waiting for him to sort of come back on because the banter with him being like sort of really dumb, it was quite understated. You know, it was just, you know, I really enjoyed it. It was just a shame that the ghostbusting stuff, you know, the ghostbusting stuff didn't quite, you know, work out for me. You know, I mean, obviously that's, you know, a big part of it, but all the, you know, the stuff them sort of like, you know, as they're, you know, in fact, it's funny actually that there's a scene where they're actually looking on the internet, what people are saying about the Ghostbusters. And when I saw it, I thought, that feels like that's sort of been added on. And apparently it has been, but basically like reshot after all the controversy, they actually shot some scenes and made it sort of like, you know, a commentary on all the stuff that was going on about the Ghostbusters. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it was sort of like, you know, for me, it was, you know, a fun, you know, laugh film. Wasn't great, but it was okay. You know, it wasn't the big disaster of the summer that everyone has been, you know, expecting it to be. And I have to say that, you know, it's the people who I know go to the cinema, most people who actually sort of know in my day-to-day life who go to the cinema tend to be women. Mm. And most of the guys I know who go to the cinema tend to be guys on message boards and stuff. that's a weird thing. A lot of the guys I know in my day-to-day life don't go to the cinema, but a lot of the women do. So, and it's, most of the women I know were basically have actually gone to see this and really, really loved it, you know, and were basically like really looking forward to going. Whereas on the, you know, the people I talk to on message boards, most of them have sort of like been really sort of negative. But I do find that people go on on message boards, how do I put this, tend to be more sort of like hard to please, you know.
There's no pleasing them,
you know, they sort of have a, you know, they I think like being sort of, you know, miserable about stuff at times, but that's how it sort of comes across to me. So, but you know, my thing, I just think it's just been a very, you know, weird sort of like, you know, built to a sort of, you know, a film. And I understand how people are offended, you know, because my favorite film of all time is Casablanca. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if somebody was to remake Casablanca and have just throwing someone out there, Ben Affleck in the main role and Scarlett Johansson, even though I actually, you know, really love them two as performers, you know, I probably would be really hating the fact that they were remaking Casablanca because I love the original so much, you know, so I probably would be against that. So I understand where people are coming from if they really, really hate, you know, the fact that Ghostbusters have been made. But at the end of the day, if you love the original, you still got the original. Mm-hmm. You can still, you know, you can still watch it. No one, I mean, this thing where people say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so is like shit on my childhood. And I'm like, you know, Michael Bay, you know, did the Transformers film, he raped my childhood, G.I. Joe, you know, and all this sort of thing. No, I haven't. You still got those memories. It's not like what George Lucas did where he basically took our originals and he really messed them up and that reshot them and everything.
And then have you heard that story about him actively going and shopping around buying original copies of the original films and destroying them? I don't know if there's some legitimacy behind
that. I've never heard that. I've heard that he said he'd like to do that with the holiday special. But I've never heard that story, and I've been reading that Star Wars books, and that never came up in there, and that's pretty thorough. So I don't know if that's an urban myth.
Yeah, that may be an urban myth that somehow survived its way in the internet age.
Yeah, it would be rather pointless though, because it's like one of the biggest selling sort of on VHS, one of the biggest selling VHSs on Laserdisc and stuff like that. So, and it's been on TV so many times. I mean, I think until recently, I still had the copy that I taped off for television. So I think that would be a rather pointless crusade, even for somebody of George Lucas's thing. But yeah, in any case, you know, my point is at the end of the day, just, you know, you know, relax. But, you know, there's no need to be a keyboard warrior and sort of harassing people for having a different opinion. And, you know, whether it be because be like it or dislike it. It's just, you know, it is what it is. And that's all I've got to say about that.
Yeah. I think we're growing up in an age where people are so sensitive about what other people say, especially online. It's like, dude, who cares? Some no-name guy on the internet who probably means nothing in the grand scheme of the cinema-going public. So it's like, why do you invest so much on what they say? It's like, and half the time it's just internet trolls. People are just saying that just to get a rise. So it's like, maybe don't get too emotionally invested in what they have to say.
No.
Okay. I feel like from one friar to another, let's talk all things Comic-Con weekend, because we're recording this on Sunday, and Comic-Con 2016 is very quickly wrapping up.
Yeah, I mean, basically the stuff to talk about on this is that is basically we've had a deluge of trailers coming through. Unfortunately, not all of the Marvel ones have sort of have actually made it onto the internet as we speak. I've just managed to, just before it went on, started recording show, I saw the Doctor Strange one. That one's appeared. But there's a Guardians of the Galaxy 2 one, which is getting a lot of really rave reviews.
Ooh, I haven't seen that one yet.
No, I've not seen it. I keep checking, but it's not, you know, so I'm expecting that maybe that should come in that. But that was sort of like, you know, really, you know, a really, really, you know, really well received, and the panel for that has had a lot of sort of, you know, that was from what I gather was one of the most fun ones, because Chris Pratt was, you know, was there. It was on form. Kurt Russell was on there. The guy, and I forget the guy's name, but he was the guy from who played the guy was the head of the Reavers. The guy who used to be on Walking Dead. Is it Michael Rooker?
I'm not sure. You're on your own this one, dude. I'm not exactly sure who you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the guy who was in Walking Dead and was in Guardians 1. He was the guy who was sort of like Chris Pratt's like sort of mentor of thing. He turned up for it. And,
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. He turned up, and he actually turned up in dressed as the character from the film. You know the blue, you know, with the red Mohican and the blue skin and everything. He turned up in the full garb. And everything. So that one got like a lot of sort of, you know, really good stuff because of the, because of that. But the trailer for that is apparently supposed to be awesome. They've got the, little Groot, you know, baby Groot, who sort of, you know, went over well. But the, so the trailers that actually, have been around and have seen DC, dropped they dropped a trailer for Wonder Woman, which I personally loved. I don't know what you think of that.
It's funny. We had all this lengthy discussion about just, you know, gender neutrality. It's like, oh, well, you know, you should just like it. It shouldn't matter what the gender of the person was. I saw about 15 seconds of this. I'm like, I don't care about Wonder Woman. Click.
I personally love this trailer. And it was, it was strange watching it because this trailer, and somebody else mentioned this, it reminded a little bit of Captain America, because there's scenes where she's like fighting in World War One, sort of on the, in the trenches and everything. And from the looks of it, it looks to me how I actually wanted the first Captain America film to be. Hmm. Which we did, you know, because what I wanted for the Captain America film was to see him fighting in World War II, battling Nazis and everything. And we didn't really get that. We had a bit of a cop-out because the main villain was sort of Hydra. So it was kind of like, it was fighting World War II, but like a fantasy version of World War II. Whereas in this trailer, she was basically very much on the battlefields of World War I and everything. You know, and I thought the scenes were absolutely great. And, you know, the scenes where she's basically, where a shell comes down and she just bats it away with a shield, and where she's sort of, you know, battling with her lasso and everything. And there's another scene where sort of, to me, it looked like the, I don't know if it was the British army or the German army, which sort of invaded her homeland, and all the Amazon women are basically battling the, you know, the male soldiers. And I personally absolutely loved this trailer. It's also, it's the music that they played during Batman v Superman when she was on, which I actually loved there. That seems to be her like theme music, because it played
again here.
That's awesome.
Because that was the one few glimmering moments in that entire film. It's a little goofy. It's a little over the top, but it's like, It works because
we went through this at the time, didn't we? We sort of said how it is corny and everything, but you wanted to cheer because it was just fun, you know. And it was sort of after everything you saw in BVS, you know, it was fun just to have a bit of corny superhero antics. But yeah, but that music, you know, that was sort of playing on there, which sort of struck a chord with me. That is obviously her theme music. But I really love this trailer. I'm really looking forward to it. And then we had obviously, it wasn't quite a trailer for Justice League. It was more like a little mini movie of sort of like, you know, a little like a short story of basically, have you seen this one, by the way?
That's the one I did see. And in fact, yeah. I think Alex sort of commented on that when we were talking about that the other night. It felt like Batman versus Superman. A lot of people were critical of the film because it was so dark and it was so serious. Where this film goes in the complete opposite direction to where it almost makes light of what's going on. It's like, okay, we're going to have a fun bouncy song and he's going to assemble the team. It's like, okay, maybe this is sort of the wrong direction too. It's like you went to the one side of the spectrum way too much and now you're going to the other side of the spectrum way too much. It's like, okay, I understand, you know, a lot of the Marvel movies are fun. They're lighthearted. It's like, but this is to the nth degree because it's like, okay, this doesn't need to be a wacky comedy. This doesn't need to be, oh, it's lighthearted. We're going to get together and we're going to throw a party or something. It's like, no, this is still a superhero movie and they're still dealing with some threats. But at the same time, it's like, it's not a comedy romp.
No, I think they're just, to be honest, I think they're just trying to, because we discussed this the other week, how they have the open visits and they've actually allowed people to talk about it now. I think we're just wanting to get the word out there that basically, in a way that they've sort of listened to some of these complaints and that they're basically, you know, this is going to be, you know, a lighter movie. It's what people were basically, you know, wanting more. So I can see, you know, why they're doing this, you know, and I personally sort of, you know, enjoy the stuff that they actually, you know, put in there. You know, again, we'll have to see where it goes. We don't know, you know, what the big villain, the villain that was sort of cut out of BVS, if that's going to be like, you know, one of the main villains. I'm sort of, you know, we'll see where it goes. But for generally speaking, I just sort of, you know, I liked what I saw. And, you know, so it will be sort of, you know, interesting what it was. But I think this is, you know, to me, it just comes across that they're basically sort of, you know, letting, you know, people know that, you know, we've sort of, you know, we heard what you didn't like. And we're sort of basically, you know, we're trying to fix that. You know, we're trying to sort of, you know, do sort of, I don't think it still looks, you know, with the costumes, everything, it still looks like, you know, a darker, you know, dark like BVS in the sense of sort of like, you know, the costumes and the sort of the tone and everything. I don't think it's going to be as sort of light as you know, outgoing and colourful as, say, the Marvel movies. But I think we're sort of going for, like, you know, a bit of a, you know, a lighter, you know, mood with this one. So I think it's got, you know, I'm personally liking what I see about it so far.
Yeah, I have the news. I think I saw a couple of weeks back on who the villain was. Someone named Stephen Wolf.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah, he's a decent, I personally don't know him, but a few, in the BVS, the new, basically re-edit that they're doing, the sort of, you know, the longer sort of like R-rated cut, he actually appears in there when Lex Luthor gets into the spaceship at the end. So he does appear, but he kind of, what worries me is he kind of looks like a sort of like one of the aliens from Independence Day. It's, you know, it's, and I'm not really into that sort of having villains who look totally, totally alien. You know, I want them to have sort of, you know, like a Thanos type character. It's sort of like, you know, can be alien, but still have enough look human thing, but you can basically sort of like, you know, relate to them in some respect. I mean, from what I hear is one of Darkseid's, agents, you know, so I'm guessing it's basically, he's going to be sort of like, you know, that means that, you know, Darkseid is going to be the, you know, the main villain in this, you know, so.
But of all the people to pick, it's like, I understand Justice League on its own doesn't have a gigantic rogues gallery, but there's still plenty of options you could have gone with. I remember when I first started hearing word of this film, it's like, the first idea was Brainiac, and I thought, pretty good. Obviously, with the Justice League, you would hope, and we're gonna have a difference when we when it comes to the pronunciation. And yours is probably correct, but from what I've heard, most people pronounce it Darkseid. But the way it's spelled, it does look like the way you say it. But it's like you would think when you finally get a DC Justice League movie, it's like, oh, okay, so you're gonna go Darkseid without even thinking about it, and not even knowing that's what they did in the New 52 right off the gate when they had Justice League. It's like that's what they went to because that's the big bad that you really should use, but. Maybe they're looking long term, but at the same time, it's like, okay, you could have gone Brainiac. You could have gone maybe doing a Luther thing versus the entire Justice League. You could have gone with Anti-Monitor. It's like Steppenwolf.
Well, it's not going to be a two-parter now either. So they're not going that long term. You know, because the original was going to be like a two-part movie, and they've ditched that. It's just going to be like, you know, the one movie. So I'm sure they'll have something to, like, you know, replace it. But interestingly enough, there was no Superman in it. Oof. No mention of Superman.
Ouch. Woof.
I mean, obviously, he's going to be in it.
And no Green Lantern either. Which I find odd.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk about doing the Green Lantern movie, but yeah, they've never mentioned him actually being in this Justice League lineup,
which I find odd because it's like I understand the film.
Well, they've not cast him, so you know.
But from all the things I've seen from the promotional work and all the stuff that they did in Batman vs Superman, they've done nothing to establish Green Lantern. And it's like I understand the last Green Lantern film didn't do all that well. But if you're looking to start with a clean slate, it's like, why not just introduce him as part of the team? Because
I think maybe if you think about it, maybe I think it's going to be like you've already got three characters who are basically going to be making their debuts in this film. So they're probably thinking that if they were sort of, you know, because there's no Green Arrow either and no Shazam, even though we know we're going to get Shazam.
Well, you think the Justice League. The big ones you think of are Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Green Lantern, and Aquaman maybe. Mm. Those are the six I think of.
Yeah. I think maybe they just think that they want to save something for like a solo movie and then have that character Justice League 2. So,
I'm pretty sure that's what the plan is. I think you're right there. Because when I saw that, I'm like, okay, they have a new Green Lantern movie in mind. They're going to do something with that, and they're going to reintroduce him in the team. That's fine and all. With that said, it's like, okay, that sort of makes sense. I'm not totally on board with it, but whatever. But you can totally justify putting Cyborg on the team. Cyborg.
Yeah, that is a weird one.
Not Martian Manhunter. Cyborg.
Yeah. That when you put it like that, that is a weird one. You know, I think the yeah, unless they basically they need a black character.
I think that's the reason why they did that.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, they could have basically, you know, because I think the current Green Lantern's black, so, you know, they could have gone that direction. But, yeah, I think that's probably why. But, you're right. I'd Cyborg.
Or you could have had a Jon Stewart, had him be Green Lantern in the film, since a lot of people grew up with that animated series with Jon Stewart as their Green Lantern. Or you could have done the thing where Martian Manhunter, when he's not his actual true form, he masquerades as an African-American man. It's like, come on, Cyborg. I mean, I understand why they're doing it. It really ties into their promotional work of what they're doing with the DC comic book. So it makes sense because they want the two to reflect each other. And they do like checking off boxes like that. And it is original superhero. It's not them just making a character everybody's familiar with and making them African-American. So I understand the business behind it. But as a fan, it's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's, the Cyborg. Yeah, I don't get that one. But, you know.
I'm not willing to go to the mat for that one, but really, Steppenwolf, that's the one where I'm like, come on, guys. Maybe a little bit better. You try. Okay. Is there anything TV movie-wise that you feel like talking as well?
No, I mean just a few other things, which to be perfectly honest, we kind of knew already. At the Marvel panel, they did the typical thing where they basically pretended that they'd ended it, and then they they basically did a last minute sort of like, oh, we just got one more thing to tell you, and they announced that Brie Larson is definitely going to be Captain Marvel. That she is announced for that. So that's really good choice. You know, I'm really on board with that. There was a Luke Cage trailer, which, I wasn't that keen of Luke Cage in Jessica Jones. I thought it was fine, but he wasn't. It was kind of a little too mild mannered to me to be the Luke Cage that I'm sort of aware of. But in this trailer, there was a lot of action scenes and stuff, and it looked a lot better. It looked a lot more like the Luke Cage that I know, basically. The action scenes were the fight scenes were a lot better. He was like throwing people, through walls and everything, and using a car door to, pulling it off and basically using it to restrain some, bad guys. And that's the Netflix show, which I believe is September. It comes out. So, that looks promising. There was an Iron Fist, a little tease.
Yes.
Not a great deal to show, but just a little bit on there, and they had a little Defenders thing as well, just so that you know that's coming, and that's kind of sort of the stuff that caught my eye. They had a Skull Island trailer, the new King Kong movie, which you didn't see much of Con in it, but you sort of, you caught a little bit of him, so that was a decent. But there's been a lot of stuff, trying to keep track of, to be honest.
now, obviously, most of this is what you're deciding to talk about, but I feel like I wouldn't be doing due diligence if I didn't ask you: have you seen the new addition to Killing Joke?
The new addition,
yes.
What as in the new scenes?
Yes,
I haven't. I've heard some people who are not happy with the way.
I'm included in there. Do you know what it is, or do you not want to be spoiled? Because I will keep it to myself. I don't want to spoil.
No, you can tell me. Go on.
Okay. So one of the things they added on to the feature of Killing Joke, the animated feature based on the comic book. Now, from what I've heard, it's a pretty faithful adaptation. But the thing is, with Killing Joke, it's a really short story. So what they decided to do, they added on a featurette having to do with Batgirl. Cool enough, right? I understand you want to pad it to make me, especially if you're going to watch it in theaters. I think they're doing that this week. They felt the need to add a scene where Batman and Batgirl have sex.
What?
That is the correct reaction. It's so bad.
Is that ever actually? Because I'm not big on my Batman lore. I have to admit this, but was that ever a thing in the comics?
Not in the comics. It is. They did establish it with their animated properties.
Right. Okay.
Let's see if I can find it, because I know I posted it on our Twitter. Let's see if I can send it to you really quick, so you get your live reaction to it. I'm shocked you didn't hear about it. I posted on the Wrestling Observer message board, and I know you since canceled your subscription, but it's like I know your subscription has yet to run out. I want to hear your live reaction. Just click on the part where it says GIF.
Okay.
Nice. I want to hear your live reaction to this. Because already, just from what I heard from you right then and there, it's like, yes, Dazza hates it too.
Okay. So that link's not where... I'm just going to look up on the on your Twitter in a second.
Okay, let's see. I'll try sending you another one. Let's see. Because this must be discussed at length. It's funny because we just talked about Ghostbuster and it was so polarizing on the internet. This is happening the opposite effect. Everyone's against it. Everybody hates it.
So you've posted it on your Twitter, yeah?
Yeah, the Comic Conversations Twitter. Twitter.com/comic podcast. None of the links I send you are working?
No, it just keeps... I'm just clicking down on you. If you send it to me on Facebook, that might...
Okay, let's try that. It's so funny because, like I said, we just talked Ghostbusters, and you know, it's really hard to get the internet degree on something. There'll be people, despite no matter how unpopular it is, there'll be people that are defending it. Nobody's defending this.
Okay, I've got it.
Okay, I was about to say, let's just let it go because killing a lot of time with this.
Oh, he's going to stand to an ass.
It gets worse before it gets better.
Oh, God. So he's right, okay. Oh. I do not. Oh, God. Okay. It was just a little clip, but I saw the bit with his hand on her ass, and then she pulls off her mask and her thing and everything, and oh, boy.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It gets worse. Apparently, Alex was able to pirate it, and he was telling me what happens in the featurette. And from what I've heard, it's absolutely god awful. Like, that's the tip of the iceberg there.
So is this basically meant to give some more sort of like to give Batman more of an edge when he goes after the Joker for revenge?
It's supposed to add
relationship.
It's supposed to add weight to it. But it just totally sucks all the air out of the room. And I was originally going to go watch a live screening at this at a theater, but now I'm like, forget it. I'll get the DVD. I'll skip ahead. I don't want to watch it. Because even Alex's wife, Lauren, watched it. And she was like, she watched it and she walked out the room. She was that offended. And like I said, what I showed you right there, and I'll post it in the description for this show, but that is the tip of the iceberg of this featurette.
Just of all the things they could have done to actually add something like that to it,
and I know what they think they're doing. They think they're adding weight to the original Killing Joke story, considering what Joker does to Barbara in that. But with that said, it's like, wow. Just when you think DC maybe is getting their act together, they kind of have a clue what they're doing. They produce something like this, and it's like, you guys have no idea what you're doing.
No, oh boy.
Although I will say this, we are talking about it. And if that was their original idea, just to produce something so terrible that the internet collectively rebels against it, it's like, well, then mission accomplished.
Yeah. But this is the sort of thing that people are just so sort of like, you know, because the Killing Joke, people wanted this to be made into a film for so long anyway. It's going to be a success. They don't have to do sort of, you know, cheap gimmicks like that.
Well,
just
to me, it's when you think about Killing Joke, it's a very short story.
Mm.
And the fact that they adapted it to a film, it's got a really, really short running time. I can't imagine it going longer than an hour. And this little featurette's about 30 minutes. So if they're going to do live screening of it, and especially if it's going to be a direct-to-home DVD, you can't just give people an hour movie and expect them to pay $20, $25. It's like, you got to get more bang for your buck, I guess. Although I'd argue against that. But, yeah.
But, yeah, but, you know, there's other ways you could basically do more to, you know, to add to this sort of story than that, basically. You know, you could do more than the sort of, like, you know, the sort of... Because the whole thing is about, basically, Batman versus Joker. You know, it's about the sort of, like, you know, the thing that they actually, what's insinuated is that they actually, they need each other. You know, but at the end, it basically, it does the sort of the thing about the two guys escaping a lunatic asylum with the sort of, like, you know, putting the torch over the, you know, over the wall so that they can escape, so to gag. And it's just the fact that they are both basically, you know, that at the end of the day, and it sort of hinted it in other sort of, comics that I've read with them, but they never sort of, like, they never actively attempt to kill each other in the end because they know that they're basically, you know, Batman needs a Joker in his life to sort of, like, you know, keep his edge and keep him motivated. And Joker needs a Batman to basically, you know, to have someone that to sort of, to play off for his basically own sort of, like, you know, psychotic things. I mean, there is actually a story, and I've not been able to track it down, but I've heard about it, where the Joker kills Batman.
I've heard the other way around.
Yeah, he basically becomes sane after that, And he basically gets his, sends his life around and actually becomes like a model citizen and everything. Mm-hmm. And so he gets like, I think he gets a family and everything and just starts to enjoy sort of like life because he's basically not got Batman around to sort of like, you know, to basically make him crazy. And I've never been able to track the story down, but I have heard about it. So, you know.
Okay.
But anyway.
Cool enough. All right. I think with that, although we're done talking the week's news. I had to hear you weigh in because it's such a, all the things that are happening at Comic-Con, this is sort of flying under the radar. And for me, who's someone who's not super gung-ho on the films and television, I'm like, whoa, this is the, everyone's bearing the lead. It's like, whoa.
It's like we're trying hard to get the R rating. You know, in, you know, it's also, we've got to have like a, you know, we've got to have some sort of sex scene in there, you know, that's how it feels.
All right. Since we're talking all things film, let's go into our weekly segment, Rate and Slate. Now, obviously last week we left off on 1983. Am I right, Dazza?
Yes.
I've made that mistake before where I either get ahead of myself or I get behind. But I think I did right this time, and we're doing 1984, right? I have nice. TKO 170 pulled up, and I believe last year was 1983 because I'm looking at the top film, and I believe that.
What was the number one film of 1983?
That was Return of the Jedi. We talked about that last.
Right. Week. Yeah. So 84.
Okay, because I've screwed up twice now, but I've learned since then. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I can learn, Dazza. All right, let's do our top 10 films according to TKO170.com. These are based entirely off box office receipts. This has nothing to do with quality. Starting at number 10, we have Footloose. Number 9, The Terminator. Number 8, Police Academy. Number 7, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Number 6, a classic, The Karate Kid. Number 5, Romancing the Stone. Number 4, Gremlins. Oddly enough, number 3, Ghostbusters. How about that? What are the odds? Unless there's something you know that I don't, Dazza. Number 2, Beverly Hills Cop. And at number 1, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. This is going to be Sophie's choice this week, Dazza. I can already tell you right now. The idea of asking me to pick one film out of these 10. And I think we discussed this last week. We're like, oh, next week's going to be a packed week. It's like there's so many good films. And we've had the opposite before happen in the past where we looked at the list and it's like there's not a good film in the bunch. Whereas this honestly, I'm looking at it right now. This may be hard when it comes to the slate time.
This is a good – in fact, after we finish giving us ratings late, there's a point I want to actually make about this list because this is there's something that actually ties in with what we were talking about earlier with Ghostbusters. But I'll leave that for a second. The film I'm going to pick from this, and it's a really tough choice because there's a lot of great films on this, but the one I'm going to pick is Gremlins.
Ooh.
And you know, Ghostbusters is great and everything. I absolutely, you know, adored that film. I adore the Indiana Jones film. You know, so many of these, but Gremlins is just some, there's just something that I really, really loved about that film and what I remember about it is in the UK, I don't know if the same thing happened in America, but in the UK, it fell afoul of the censors.
Oh.
Because the basically not so much the censors, but the rating. I seem to remember they gave it a 15 certificate because and at the time I would be about I think I'd be about 12, maybe 13. So I basically was under the age thing. So I was absolutely, you know, I had to wait until it was on the video for actually see the film. So it had that kind of like that sort of, you know, a bit of a forbidden, element to it for somebody of my age. But I absolutely, you know, adore. It's real weird, Dad, because it was 15 certificate, but I do remember having in the UK we have something that we used to have called sticker albums, where you would basically buy, so for a lot of movies, you would basically buy like a sticker album, and then you would basically, you would buy the little packets of stickers you know, to put in the album, and you'd sort of do swapses and stuff. You'd have like little numbers of where to, you know, to put the stickers. There would always be some stickers that you couldn't actually get. And I remember this was a thing for kids, so they did one for Gremlins, which was weird. It was a 15 movie, but they still did like the kids merchandise and everything. But I absolutely fell for this film. On the one hand, I actually, you know, I wanted a Gizmo because I thought it looked the most awesome pet ever. You know, and the humor of it is hilarious. The bit where they go into the cinema and they're all watching Snow White and they're all singing along with Hi Ho, Hi Ho, it's off to where we go. I think that scene is hilarious. And there's even a bit where sort of one of the two protagonists in there are sort of they're in the cinema and they're sort of all, they're watching Snow White and they're enjoying it. You know, it's just, there's a scene in the bar as well where they're getting all up to the thing. I just absolutely, you know, loved this film. It was really gory and almost scary and stuff. But again, this is something that we go back to. If they made that film now, it would be all CGI.
Yeah.
Back then.
See, this is going back to my original thing when we were talking about Ghostbusters. It's like, I understand why films studios don't do it nowadays because it's very expensive. And the idea of doing CG, you could do more with it and it's cheaper, but at the same time, it doesn't look as good. The technology isn't quite there. It's obviously made leaps and bounds since then, but it's not quite there yet. So it looks a little off, whereas practical effects are always great.
Yeah. But yeah, I really, you know, really love this film. It's just, you know, just hilarious for so many reasons. And the sequel as well, which not as good, still had a lot of really good stuff in there. You know, they had sort of like, you know, one of the gremlins that was like really intelligent and stuff. And it was a franchise that didn't really sort of, you know, but it's one of those things that they talk about bringing it back, which I personally hope would not for the reasons that we've just mentioned. But as a film, you know, I absolutely love this film as a kid. It's actually, and believe it is great because when I get to December, I always sort of like, you know, like to watch Christmas movies, and it is a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, so it's sort of, you know, it is, you know, it ticks a lot of boxes. Yeah. So, yeah. So the one that I would basically, and it's a film that I would recommend because I think it's something that I actually saw it last December when I was having a bit of a Christmas movie marathon, and it still holds up today. You know, they sort of, you know, as a film. So it's one that I would sort of recommend people to, you know, introduce the kids to.
Okay.
And introduce your kids to it because it is basically, it might be a 15 stick for the UK.
I think
it's a family film.
Yeah, I think I'd wait to a certain age because I remember when this film came out, I was sort of hesitant to watch it because it's obviously, it's still a horror movie. And as a kid, I think like maybe when I was, I don't know, I couldn't even tell you what age, maybe in the single digits. I saw the film and I'm like, it kind of looks scary and I didn't want to watch it. But they trick you because they have that Bugs Bunny Daffy Duck intro. It's like, oh, okay, maybe this won't be so bad. It's like, oh, oh no. So obviously this is a movie I didn't enjoy as a kid. But, you know, since then I've watched it as an adult. It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
It's one of these films to where you can kind of watch it, and obviously as a kid you probably think it's actually legitimately scary, but as an adult it's like it has its moments where it's a little over the top with the you know, there's a lot of gore in there considering how yeah, lighthearted the film is supposed to be taken.
But one of them gets beheaded, another gets put in a microwave and stuff, so it does have a you know. It does have a lot of gore, but yeah, yeah.
It doesn't want you to forget it's a horror movie at its heart, because there's so many fun aspects, there's so many funny sequences in the movie, but at the end of the day, they don't want you to forget, by the way, there's all this funny stuff going on, but it's still a horror film.
But this week, and we've talked about this before, going through this list, you know, we don't call them kids' movies, but like family movies, you know, there were films that basically, there was sort of like a crossover that sort of like, you know, children could watch with their parents and enjoy. You know what I mean? It's sort of, you know, whereas nowadays it's sort of like, you know, action films, they seem to be either like really, really violent so you can't have the kids, or really, really sort of like, you know, tame so that you alienate the parents. Well, you know, whereas this is a film that sort of like, you know, both could sort of like, you know, get kicks out of.
Well, I think that's the reason why, and obviously there's other film studios that do this. But the one that comes to mind when I think of those kind of films you were talking about, not kid films, family films, the ones that really stick out like a sore thumb for me are the Pixar films. You can watch those as an adult and you get something out of it that necessarily the kid wouldn't. The kid can watch it and then they watch it and they enjoy it on a completely different level as well. To me, those are family movies to where, you know, the entire family can watch it and they all get something out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if necessarily Gremlins is that movie. Cause remember as a child, I was terrified of this film. But I can kind of maybe see in a couple of years, maybe when I started getting into double digits, I'd be like, okay, I can enjoy this film. There's enough comedy in it to where I could watch this with my family. Okay. And for my pick for Ray, it's not easy because there's a bunch of great films on here. There's Terminator, which I love. Police Academy, I love. Karate Kid is an absolute classic. Beverly Hills Cop was really the capping of Eddie Murphy's career. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That one I was torn with. I was like, I may have to pick that one because I absolutely love it. But for me, sort of piggybacking on, we were sort of calling back to what we were talking about earlier, I'm going to go with Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Fantastic film. Instant classic. Love it. It's so beloved. I'm going to have to go with that. That's not to say I'm not being objective here. This is not the point of Rate and Slate. This has never been the point of Rate and Slate where we're trying to be objective. No, we're completely subjective and we're picking our favorite film. So for me, I'm going to go with Ghostbusters. But with that said, there's a lot of steep competition. And it was really hard.
I love Ghostbusters as well. Actually, funny enough, talk about the censorship thing. I remember going to see that film with a friend. It was one of the first films I actually went to see, but I didn't go with parents. I went with a friend. And there's a scene in there where basically my dad asked me about this scene because he spoke to somebody at work who basically seen it and told about this scene. And there's a scene that they actually cut out of whenever they show it on TV. And it's where basically Dan Aykroyd gets a blowjob from a ghost.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. Obviously, I've since gone and watched the original on DVD, and it's like, no, that's still in there. I'm surprised they took that out because they don't show that much.
They show it on TV in the UK. They cut it out. You know, there's a few, but when I've seen, but this is like in the daytime on the terrestrial channels, which are always a bit sort of like they take out swearing and stuff. But there's a few other scenes as well where there's a bit where Bill Murray says, "And we came, we saw, we kicked its ass," and they've sort of cut that out as well, you know, because it's basically got ass in the thing. So, you know, the terrestrial TV, which I think you would call network TV, is a very sort of comes down on stuff.
Okay,
like
I could see how them doing that makes sense.
You watch on the satellite channels, and it's totally anything goes.
I wouldn't say anything goes, especially when you're talking like basic cable, and standards of. Standards have changed. Maybe a couple of years they would have changed that on basic cable, but nowadays nobody cares.
Yeah. But Ghostbusters, you know, I love as well. You know, it's a great movie. Love the theme music and everything like that. It's just sort of just a really fun film. And plus as well, some people say I look like Bill Murray, so, you know.
Yes, we had a lot of that at the biggest convention. And I don't know who was it that kept bringing it up, and I'm like, yep, he does. It's funny.
It gets mentioned in the UK from time to time. I have customers in my shop that will say it maybe once every year or so. But when I'm in America, because you Americans are a lot more sort of like forthright and stuff, I get it all the time. I'd be like walking through a casino and someone would actually stop me to tell me and stuff like that. And I went to see a show called Raiding the Rock Vault, which is basically also to musicians from all different bands who basically play all classic music together, like an exploration of 70s and 80s rock. And afterwards, I always get like some merchandise for them to sign and stuff. And they all mention that, oh, do you know you look like Bill Murray? You know, so in America, I hear it all the time because you guys
are basically. Do you think that's a compliment or after a while, does that grain on you?
To be honest, it's fun.
Oh, okay.
Then, you know, I actually sort of like, you know, it's quite, you know, I quite get a kick out. And I've said before, I went to in cosplay as a ghost, as Venkman the Ghostbuster a few years back. And that was like my 15 minutes of fame because people get stopping asking to have a picture taken with me and saying, I've got to have a picture taken because you look so much like him and stuff like, you know, so that was fun.
I don't think anyone could mistake you for him.
No.
But what you could do is say you're related to him.
See what you could get away with. I would actually like to get my picture taken with him. I think that would be fun.
That'd be awesome. He's a very elusive man, though, so good luck with that.
My parents have seen him, actually, because they go to a... In St. Andrews, they go, in Scotland, they every year there's like a pro celebrity golf tournament. And they get sort of like, you know, sort of like, they used to get the pros partnering up with like the celebrities. So they've seen people like Samuel Jackson, Sylvester Stallone, you know, various other celebrities. And I think it was last year they went and Bill Murray was there. And they said he was hysterical. Like he was making jokes with the crowd as he walked around and stuff. Because a lot of them take it quite seriously and just play the golf. But he was basically talking to the crowd and making jokes and having fun and stuff. So, you know, they said it was awesome.
I was going to have some fun at your expense. It's like, wait, how many years ago was this, Dazza?
Yeah, I knew. I thought it was
so perfect. I bet your mom did meet Bill Murray, all right. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself.
No, as soon as I said that, I thought, I know where he's going with this.
Dazza knows me well enough, so he's like, oh, God. I shouldn't mention this around Tony, but. He can't help himself. Okay. And just quickly, since we're talking about films that we enjoy so much, I'd be amiss if I didn't mention one of my favorite films at number 39, the original Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know if you're a fan, Dazza. It's not super important to me that you are, but I'd be amiss if I didn't mention that. I'd say it's probably my top five. My fave five if you're Booker T.
I really enjoy the Freddy versus Jason film.
Okay. Dazza, between me and you.
Yeah.
I may edit this off. I love that film too.
Yeah. Oh, that film's awesome. The fight scene's great.
Because everybody craps on that film and they have a legitimate gripe on it. But it's like, I like it. As a fan of the franchises, it's like, I like it. Is it the best film? No. Is it a great representation of the characters? Not necessarily. But is it a decent film? Yeah.
What you needed to do, which was to get Jason and Freddy hacking limbs off each other. That's all you wanted.
It's a guilty pleasure of mine.
Yeah. Listen, you know enough about the films that I sort of watched and enjoy on the sort of like the straight to Netflix films, as they're called nowadays. You know, you know enough of some of my sort of guilty pleasure tastes.
Okay, so, sort of piggyback off that. Obviously, so we're talking our guilty pleasure, but this has nothing to do with that. Now, of these 10 films, Dazza, which one would you have to slay? If you felt like slaying any of them, it's like, you look at this top 10, it's like, I don't know if you really can.
Well, basically for me, it would be Footloose.
Okay.
Part of it is basically when I was like a young kid, a young lad at the time. So the whole sort of dancing movies that all the girls used to get really like, you know, hyped over, like, you know, Flash Dance and all that sort of thing. I just didn't get them at the time. And to be honest, some of those films like Dirty Dancing and Flashdance since then, I've actually sort of like appreciated and have a lot of fun with. Footloose, I've just never really sort of like, you know, took to that one. It's just sort of, you know, it's just, you know, it's not a, you know, I mean, the Kevin Bacon dance is, you know, it's quite fun and seeing him sort of doing all that, but I'm not a fan of Footloose. So that would be the one that I would slate.
Okay. Now obviously I exercised this before in the past. And I don't think I could pick one. Because, obviously, Footloose, I understand why you would pick that, and I don't blame you. But I still think it's a decent film.
It's not terrible. It's just out of that list, it's the one that is not my thing. And it's the sort of film that I don't think ages that well, to be honest. But, you know.
No, and since I've exercised this in the past, I'm openly going to choose to not pick a slate, because these are all great films.
Okie doke.
All right.
Before we move on, I just want to make a point about this year, basically just to sort of, something I found interesting about this year is because we talked about what great films they are. Out of these 10 films, there's only two on there, which are basically sequels or remakes or even what you didn't have franchise movies back then. All the rest are sort of like original first time movies. You know, some of them had sequels later, but they're also to original for the screen. You compare that to a lot of the lists in like the last sort of 6 years and stuff. Most of the time, if you look at the lists, it's pretty much all, I mean, sometimes you'll get basically like 8 out of the 10 films are all either franchise movies or remakes or reboots or sequels or stuff like that. Even a film like, I looked at, like, you know, last year's box office, even a film like, say, The Martian, which is basically like, you know, and which, you know, isn't part of a reboot or anything like that. It's based on a best-selling book. There's very few films nowadays which are basically total original ideas that basically are sort of, you know, for the screen. You know, like Gremlins was basically a film created for the screen. Ghostbusters was created, even though it was like a really weird TV show that was kind of influenced by, it was created, you know, by, you know, for the, you know, for the screen and everything. The only films nowadays, I mean, I'm talking obviously, you know, the blockbusters, the top 10, because there's lots of like original concepts out there. They're just sort of in your more highbrow type films. They're not in your sort of blockbuster films like in the 80s. The only ones that are sort of like are basically making sort of, you know, original, you know, characters and things are basically the animated films, you know, like the Pixar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generally speaking, and it's basically, I can see why it is, because there's basically, as audience and as we ourselves, I mean, now, you know, I love my Marvel movies and my DC movies and that sort of thing, but there's, you know, the actual, you know, the films written, you know, purely for the screen and stuff, they don't do well. And I think it's sad, because, like, you know, what, you know, where are the, like, the, you know, the Gremlins or the Ghostbusters of today? You know, it's just sort of, you know, it's just, I've just found it interesting as we've sort of gone through this sort of thing, but this sort of, like, you know, the idea of them sort of like, you know, and again, I will sort of like go to see all the Star Wars films and stuff like that, but, you know, but we're not seeing like a new Indiana Jones character coming along or anything like that. And it's kind of missing.
Yeah. I just wanted to make that point.
And I understand, obviously, a couple of years back, you had that recession, and I understand why Hollywood felt the need. Let's play it safe. Let's have something that's already established. Let's just make a sequel. We know kind of what we're going to get when we make the movie. I sort of understood those days. It's like, well, okay, this was a couple years back. I understand why you might make these film sequels, because you kind of need a surefire hit. But nowadays, it's like the economy's getting a little better. It's like, okay, maybe make some original films that take a risk. Who's to say if it'll be good or bad? But really, it's sad that you're seeing this, that there's this, they feel the need to go to the well so many times with all these franchises. I mean, it's nice, and it's kind of reflective of who has money nowadays, when you're seeing these properties that you and I grew up with are now being major motion pictures, the biggest films of the weekends. But at the same time, it's like, well, it'd be nice if you did some original stuff too. Like, I'm trying to think of some, like, original films that they produced in the last couple of years that have really caught on. I really can't think of anything. Like, off the top of my head, I'm sure if I did some investigation, I'd be like, oh, Daz, you forgot this, and this is a new franchise. But off the top of my head, I can't list anything.
Mm. But, I mean, the make sort of like, you know, original films and stuff, they just don't get into, you know, they're sort of like your more sort of like serious art type films. You know, stuff, maybe that's the wrong word, but stuff like, you know, a film like Nice Guys, you know, which I, you know, really, really loved, and, other films like Her a couple of years about, you know, the guy who falls in love with computer, you know, but the stuff like that. And there was the other one with, oh God, I forgot what the film's called, but it's the one where they sort of make a sort of a robot girl. I completely forgot. He got Oscar nominated, stuff like that. He's totally, you know, gone off my head right now.
Oh, but, Ex Machina?
Ex
Machina?
That's the one. Yeah. Stuff like that.
It's funny, we were just talking, what's called, that's somebody else. Never mind. I got confused. I was like, speaking of Captain Marvel.
But but films, like, you know, back in the 80s, it was your blockbusters. That, you know, the stuff that, you know, was sort of like, you know, that were basically being the original movies,
mm-hmm.
You know, the original concept and characters and stuff like that. And then you would obviously get the sequels and stuff. But, you know, nowadays, you're not, so, you know, you're having to sort of, you know, if you want something like, you know, new and challenging, you have to sort of, you know, go to films like that. But we sort of, but unfortunately, those films don't do well. You know, there's a comedy. That I basically I'd never even heard of. I don't think you even know if it got shown on the cinemas in the UK, called Dale and Tucker versus Evil.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I heard about
it. Yeah, I thought that film was hysterical. I absolutely loved that film. But you know, it was basically, you know, I had to go to Netflix to see it. I never sort of like, you know, got a whiff of it in the, you know, in the UK. And it was like, you know, for me, a film that, you know, probably should have done really well, but it didn't, because it didn't have the sort of like, you know, the star or part of a franchise or that sort of thing, you know, behind it, you know, to sort of, you know, to make it up there. But, you know, but that's just, you know,
that's you getting on your soapbox.
Yeah. Okay. So what won the Oscars then, and what did the Razzies?
What won the Oscar for best film of 1985? Like we established before, they do it the year after. Amadeus.
Oh.
Not a bad film, but considering it wasn't in the top 10, which is odd, but we've seen that. And it's funny, you brought up Nice Guys earlier. I'm sure come Oscar time, it didn't get a lot of talk when it came out. But I'm sure when Oscar time comes rolling around, that's probably going to be up there for Best Picture or Best Comedy. Best Actor nominations.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, I mean, that's actually one of my parents' favorite films. They love that film. It's a good film.
Okay. And for Razzies, we have, how do you want to do this again? Because we haven't been really consistent in how we do it. Do you want me to list off the candidates?
If you announce all the, for the ones which were nominated for the films, mm-hmm. and then the winner, but also we have to basically confess if there's any on there that we that we actually like, because this is normally me, because my sort of taste being what they are, there's normally some films on there that I actually will like. So if you just want to do the ones which were nominated and the winner.
Okay, I'll do these are all the nominees for Worst Picture, and I'll end with what won Worst Picture. Where the Boys Are 84, I should say. Sheena. Rhinestone. Cannonball 2. And Worst Picture, according to the 5th Annual Golden Razzie Awards, Bolero.
Oh, God. I don't think I've ever seen Bolero. But I remember at the time there was like it was a film that got loads of publicity. I think because Bo Derek appeared nude in it.
Yes,
I think that was sort of the big thing, and it was one of, because it was sort of based on that. I think it was sort of it was sort of seen as probably quite tacky and everything, so that's why it got a lot of the bad press. I've got to admit, on that list, I basically, there's none which I will basically sort of want to save. I mean, I remember Cannonball Run 2. I love the first Cannonball Run film. Cannonball Run 2 was kind of just sort of like, it was very weird because everyone aged massively between the two films. It's Burt Reynolds basically just, I remember really looking forward to seeing Cannonball Run 2 because I loved the first one. It was so much fun and everything. And it was sort of, there's a very weird thing in the first one with Roger Moore playing someone who thinks he's Roger Moore, which is quite a meta thing for the time. But I loved it. And Burt Reynolds at the time was like, you know, this like really super cool, like, you know, action guy. But in this one, he just seemed to, I mean, there wasn't a big gap between that and the first one, but he aged massively. And Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin had aged, and everyone just seemed to, like, you know, get, you know, and the concept was exactly the same as the first one and aped so many things. It was just really, really awful. You know, I was not a fan on this. I'm just looking up some of these other films, because I've got to admit, I'm not familiar with. Rhinestone was a film starring Sylvester Stallone and Dolly Parton. I have to admit, I have never seen this film, and that just seems like a really that seems like a really random pair up, you know, sort of. Yeah, because this is when Sylvester Stallone was really, really big. Because he was still doing the Rocky films. He was about to do Rambo and stuff. So he was really big at this time. So that's a weird one. Where the Boys Are, that's kind of like a teenage sex comedy. Never heard of that. And Sheena, I'm guessing this is the, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. Like the Tarzan type thing. Yeah, I don't know that one. Good to me, I don't. Oh, Tanya Roberts. I know Tanya Roberts. I remember thinking she was really hot when I was a kid, but a really bad actress. She was in one of the James Bond. She was a Bond girl. She was Ooh. In View to a Kill, which was sort of like a pretty. But yeah. None of those are ones which I particularly cared for, because I've not heard of them. So there.
All right. From there, we are going to other. Funny you should bring up Sylvester Stallone. He won Worst Actor in Rhinestone. And we were talking Bellario just a second ago. Worst Actress, Bo Derek.
Yeah.
So other notables, Brooke Shields with the mustache and Sahara as Dale, Worst Supporting Actor. I'm looking through this. No, those are really the only things that really stand out. Are there any ones that you have a guilty pleasure? Because I'm looking at these, and most of these I've never heard of, so I can't really.
No. There's nothing on there that I sort to look at and think, oh, that's, no.
Okay. Since we're talking all things movies, Dazza, has there anything besides Ghostbusters that you've been watching as of late that you want to talk about?
I would say Now You See Me 2. Which I really enjoy the first film.
Okay.
This one, not so much. It was okay, but the characters that I liked in the first one seemed quite annoying in this. And one of the things I liked about the first one is that they were all like smart people, but they had sort of, they were twisting it because they were like one step ahead of everybody else. In this one, they weren't. And there were certain scenes that just like went on and on. And on. There was this scene where we're trying to like pass this card from each other to sort of, you know, I won't go into the plot, but basically they have this like playing card that we're basically trying to keep away from this. We were trying to smuggle out to this, this like science lab, and we're like throwing it to each other. It was quite cute for a bit, but the scene just went on and on and on. So the film was okay. It wasn't terrible, but I wasn't particularly enamored with it. And then last night I went to see Star Trek Beyond, which, it wasn't as good as the first Star Trek film, but it was better than, I'm talking about the reboot, but it was better than Into Darkness. It was, you know, and I see, this is a point that we brought up earlier. I liked it. But it's one of these things where the CGI is almost looking dated now. You know, if this is over, you know, this CGI, these like CGI aliens, they almost look like cartoons and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's something as well we talk about. There are lots of scenes. Basically, it's one of these scenes where there's lots and lots of fast cuts. So it was sometimes it was really hard during the action scenes, really hard to actually keep up with what was going on. And also there was the scene where basically when the aliens were attacking, it was so fast and there were so many of them and was so loud. And there were times when it was sort of like so dark in the actual, like, you know, when we were sort of going and shit. It was really hard at times to actually keep up with what was going on. Now, I have to say, for the most part, I enjoyed the film. But the bits that I enjoyed the film, because, and this isn't going to be a spoiler because you can tell that this actually happened in the trailer. In the film, they basically crash on this planet and everyone gets separated. And we also like, are paired off into like these odd little pairings. And I sort of enjoyed that. I enjoyed them basically being on the planet and trying to find each other, you know, and having their own little sort of like, you know, adventures along the way. And that sort of character piece, I really enjoyed that. The stuff when we get into space and the action scenes, I, you know, was not as enamored by. But there was some like, you know, really, really fun stuff in there. And it was a lot of fun. I would give it probably 3.5. out of 5. So again, not great, but you know, real, you know, if you like Star Trek and like the, you know, the current stuff in there, there was a lot of stuff to enjoy in there. And they also had a new character in there, which I've got to admit, I've actually forgot her name, but there was a new character that was in there, this alien character that I really, really liked. And, you know, that was, you know, that was an addition. I have to say as well, it was quite sad at the end because there was a little thing, like a tribute to Leonard Nimoy, because this is the first film that's come out since he died, which was nice. But then they also had a little thing for Anton Yelchin, who basically passed away just about a month ago, which and when that hit, but that was like, you know, really sad because that's, you know, a guy who basically, you know, died, you know, well before his time. So that was like, you know, it was nice that they put a little thing in there, but it was, you know, a sad little piece in that. The person who I was sort of trying to, whose name I was, it was Sophia Boutelli, who was basically a character in this film called Jayla. She was sort of like, you know, an alien character in there, was like, you know, a really kick-ass, you know, character who I really liked. But yeah, generally the film was enjoyable, you know, not the greatest Star Trek films, but it was sort of like, you know, I enjoyed it.
Okay. And from there, have you been reading anything as of late?
I've read a few things, actually. I read that when I went to Vegas, you bought me a Wolverine comic.
Yeah.
The new Wolverine, the Squirrel Girl. Really enjoyed it. And again, it was sort of one of these. I don't know if it's the same for if this was just like a one-off at the tone, but I enjoy the comedy comics that Marvel does nowadays. And this one had a lot of we had Squirrel Girl in there. You know, had a sort of a nice little plot with her. So I really enjoyed.
I thought the character you would have walked away loving the most is Gabby, the clone of the clone of Wolverine.
Yes. Yeah.
I think I was talking to Alex the other day when we were reviewing the latest edition. It's like, it's funny because the book's supposed to focus on Laura X-23, who's now Wolverine, but really, that book is slowly becoming the Gabby book.
Yeah, I really enjoy that book. Another couple of things. I got a few of the Rebirth ones. I got the Justice League one, which I was kind of disappointed in, to be honest.
Yeah, I could have told you that.
Yeah, it was kind of. I'm never a big fan of the big monster trash in a city thing because I think it's done way too often. It's often done. I found when you basically do a team book and you basically push them all together and give them, it seems to be like the easy thing to fall back on is to have a big Godzilla type monster attacking the city.
It's it's lazy. It's like, okay, the Justice League versus a bunch of aliens. Yeah, a big whoop.
I much prefer the sort of like the fighting like a sort of like a humanoid villain, or basically like a team of villains. That's the sort of thing I like. It's sort of, it's like you say, it's way too easy. So, but I love the artwork. I love the artist, you know. And another thing that I have to say as well about the Rebirth, one thing that I've sort of been disappointed with is that I thought that this would be sort of like an easy jump on point for a lot of these titles. And I've not found it to be that because I've bought a couple of the Superman. For a start, you've got like about four Superman comics on the go, so it's hard to think. And when I was sort of reading that, there seemed to be some sort of like storyline going into Rebirth that I wasn't familiar with.
Did you not read the title Rebirth?
No, and I could never get it. So
that's it's kind of that one's kind of important.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, but the I actually got three issues of the one of the Batman ones, and it's for one with the siblings, the Gotham and Gotham Girl.
Yeah, are you up to issue three yet?
Yeah.
Okay, it's starting to get good, right?
Yeah, I really like that one. You know, it's just like a cool Batman story with characters that are basically got, there's a little intrigue in there. You know, there's something, you know, something going on. And actually, you know, because basically what I wanted to do with this Rebirth is basically just maybe pick like one or two DC comics and just jump off it and see where I go with them. Because I wanted to do the same with the Wonder Woman, because I bought the first issue of one of the Wonder Woman ones, which I didn't realize is there's actually two Wonder Woman comics out as well. So that was kind of, so I'm going to like try and figure my way around that one. But I have to say that the one thing that I actually do love about the Rebirth, even ones I've had to flick through, the artwork across them all is great. You know, I absolutely love the artwork. And it's kind of, to me, it's kind of like the, how I like, you know, my artwork. So to just sort of like, you know, straightforward and striking and visually, you know, interesting. You know, the team of artists they've got, you know, I absolutely adore. And I think they, because of the way they're done, I think they make it easier for people to sort of like, you know, to sample, basically, because it's quite straight. It's striking. It's quite straightforward and easy to understand, artwork, yeah, which not, I think a lot of artwork nowadays is sort of like very interesting and very creative and stuff. But a lot of it I find, you know, is off-putting to sort of like, you know, to first-time people because it is quite out, you know, way out there.
Yeah, I think most of the titles have the art that you're talking about right there, where it's sort of done like a house style where all the books kind of look alike. The only one where they kind of play with the art a little bit is the Flash book. But even that, it isn't over the top. But they do a couple of stylized things, which I really like, are really cool. I kind of hope going forward that they maybe branch out a little bit, because I always feel like that was always the strength from Marvel. It's you could read like a dozen different titles and you'll get a different style of art in each one. I always thought that was the strength of Marvel, is they're willing to think outside the box and have different kind of artists. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, but you know, it's always nice to see a variety of art. But you know,
I think it's what fits the tone. Because for example, the comedy ones that I read, I'm fine with that being a different sort of like cartoony hour because it fits with the actual, you know, the comic itself. I think with Marvel, it's quite, you know, when you've got like a shared universe, it's quite difficult at times if you've got lots and lots of different interpretations of all the characters, you know, whereas with this rebirth, we're sort of like, you know, trying to sort of like, you know, sort of not quite a relaunch, but basically trying to sort of like, you know, sort of, you know, set things, you know, together, you know, again, having sort of like, you know, similar-ish artwork across the board, at least to start it off, you can basically sort of see these characters as being in there. Whereas sometimes when we're with some of the Marvel, if I would read like an Avengers and then an X-Men ones, even though they're supposed to be in the same world, you look at it and you think these look like completely different, you know, universes, you know, but that's how I always feel about it.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, I really enjoyed the Star Wars comic this week. I don't know if you're still reading that.
No, I've long since given up on those books because, with the exception of Vader, a lot of them just feel like throwaway stories. And I'm like, okay, these are fine. Jason Aaron's a really good writer. Often the art's really good, but with that said, it's like I don't need to read this.
Yeah, but the Star Wars one that I really enjoyed because it basically focused on a squad of stormtroopers.
Ooh,
and they were this like elite, badass stormtrooper group, and you saw the entire story. So basically they were on this mission to take down this rebel cell, and it was interesting because they were like, as opposed to normal stormtroopers who was always joking, you know, can't eat a cow's ass with a banjo, you know, these guys were like, you know, they, you know, it was the rebels who were the ones who were basically overmatched. You know, these stormtroopers, they were like, they had like a sniper guy in there. They all had the sort of ones who were doing their job, and all of them were basically their sort of like, you know, their skill. And they were like, you know, by the end of the issue, you have this like, you know, complete set of badasses, you know, and it was just sort of like, you know, great to see that. Plus as well, they actually, it focused on sort of on one character and his history, and it turned out that he, when he was young, was actually saved from like a slave fighting pit by a team of stormtroopers. So basically he saw the Empire as like a force for good because they'd basically taken him out of slavery. So he saw them as like a force for sort of like, you know, for order and everything. And it turns out that one of his sort of stormtrooper buddies was killed by a rebel ambush one time. So he absolutely hated the rebels for personal reasons. So it was like a different take on the Star Wars sort of, you know, thing. So there's someone who actually saw the rebellion as sort of terrorists and stuff. So I just thought it was like something that'd be interesting that they did, but also something that they've now created this complete set of stormtrooper badasses who I'm guessing at some point are going to basically go after the regular, you know, Luke and Han and everything. So it was just like a really cool little sort of story that I really like this month.
Okay.
And Vader's finishing a few months as well. So
yeah, that was Vader. Vader's the one where I'm like, okay, Star Wars, that sounds like a great story, but with that said, it's a one-off, whereas Vader's been this one overarching story, and it's so good. Did you read the latest issue?
I did, yes. Yes.
So cool. It's like, you're reading it, it's like, and you're doing the Dukes of Hazzard thing. It's like, oh, how's Vader going to get out of this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you who haven't read, the main antagonist in that series has been, after the events of what happened in Star Wars Episode 4, Vader has been demoted, and this high-ranking general has been put in Vader's position. And most of the book is just Vader trying to get his position back. But obviously, this guy's going rogue against the Emperor and Vader, so the Emperor sends Vader after him. So Vader finally confronts him, and this general tells Vader, by the way, I was one of the people that helped make your cybernetic suit post what happened in Star Wars Episode 3. And I have a remote that I can shut you down. He's like, I always wondered if you were more man or machine. He presses the button and Vader completely shuts down. He bends a knee and then he just folds over and it's like, whoa.
Yeah. That's one of the good things about the Vader comic is that you're meeting people who are just as ruthless as Vader and who are basically sort of also, because Vader's got his schemes going on, but the guys who he's basically like hunting and in rivalry with, they've got their schemes and their, you know, so there's like lots of twists.
Oh, I think it was the very quickly wrap up the show. I remember the last issue or a couple issues back where they had that one scene. And I absolutely loved it where Vader's talking to the Emperor. And obviously he dispatched all these people who would be his replacement in the future. And Vader's they're talking back and forth. Vader says, and I bet if one of those guys had beat me, you'd be telling them what you just told me. And then the Emperor, without telling him anything, Vader's just like, but that doesn't matter right now. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. That was a great little beat that happened in that book. And I was like, yes. If you have to read any of the Star Wars ones, that's the one I recommend.
The Vader one is real. I also I do enjoy the regular Star Wars one as well. It's kind of faltered a bit in the last sort of like half year. It sort of had like a prison breakout saga, which I wasn't really that into. But generally speaking, the Vader one has been a really good story.
Okay, I think that's going to do it for this week's show. This is something you want to talk about, Dazzle?
No, not really. Just that basically, I'm working at the moment on my Invicta preview because it's Invicta on Friday night. So it's kind of like the tradition that I do. So, you know, that will be hopefully by the time that this goes up, that will be, around there. Hopefully I want to get it out a few days before Invicta, so maybe about Wednesday it'll drop, something like that.
Color me pumped. All right. I think that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.
Bye.